then and now. So, through Virgil, Rome had its foundation myth, and through Homer, Greece had another kind of foundation myth. The warrior's return, the final move from a world of gods, monsters, and heroes to a world of farm and family. It would be nice to say that it all ended like that. The heroes were back from Troy, men and women settled down to hearth and home and plough and pasture. The gods receded from human affairs. Human history began. Of course, neither myth nor reality follows the path of niceness. Hundreds of years were to pass between the heroes homing and Homer's hymning. The Greeks continued to construct idols, build shrines and temples, burn sacrifices, and fully commit to the worship of their gods. They knew the time of theophanies, gods manifesting themselves in the mortal world, might be over, but the marble temples they now built were grander and more confident than the wooden fanes their pious ancestors had made do with. They knew, of course, that it was rarer for them to catch sight of a nymph or a naiad than it had been for their forefathers, but still they believed. The fairies and pixies that once communed with the English in their fields and meadows receded from human intercourse, in all the senses of the word, in like manner. We may and should reverence and thank the Greeks for the free, open thinking that their written philosophy and political science gave the world. But we should remember, too, that Socrates, the freest and most open philosopher of the great Athenian age, was put to death by the state for asebeia, blasphemy, impiety, corrupting young minds by teaching against the accepted norms of religion. The regimes of Solon and Pericles were far from secular. The stories that the earlier generations had told, the stories that later poets such as Hesiod and Homer shaped into the narratives that we can still read today, the stories that we call myths, tell us as much about human nature, human personality, and the destiny of our species as do the dialogues of Socrates as written down by Plato. Indeed, Socrates and Plato used myths as analogues and models for many of their descriptions of humanity. In a world where absolute data and information are the vital currency, you might say a world where absolute data and information are the gods, we do well, I am convinced, to remember the power of the non-absolute, the power of story, myth, ceremony, ritual, and symbol. I see myself appearing 1,000 times in the Greek myths, as fool, bungler, criminal, lover, villain, and, very rarely, hero. I have never recognized myself in ones and zeros and digital data sets, like some lost Tron warrior sucked into the circuit, battling the pulses of current. While it's very hard to believe or make sense of fact, fiction is highly credible. Narrative theory, with its analytical approach to mimesis and hetero and homodiegetic schemes, its maximum of 9, or is it 10, stories, its 5, or is it 6, eternal archetypes, heroes and antagonists, combined with the digitization of all the stories ever committed to paper or processor, might well allow artificial intelligences of the future, or even ones that exist as I type this, to create new epics of the scale and sweep of Homer's, convincingly including earthy and very similar episodes, as well as profound and psychological realism, Telemachus's sneeze and Achilles' touching preference for dirt-poor tenant farming over the Elysian fields, for example. We might recoil at the idea, but the current thinking on who Homer was, a kind of crowd-sourced compendium, could remind us of the way generative i.e. content-producing AI, works. It is alien for most of us to think that way, but it is the direction in which our noosphere is tending.